Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Build Shop Podcast. I am one half of the hosting crew, Ryan Brath, and I'd like to welcome to the show my co-host, Mike. Mike, welcome to the Build Shop.
Thank you, sir. It's been a little while since we've had an episode, so nice to be back on the saddle and then get some podcasts out.
Yeah, we had, you know, a few things happened at TXG. I think I know we talked about it on a couple different lives that we did on the YouTube channel. I don't want to say they were impromptu, because they were definitely something we were trying to get together. But you know, it was, they were during some busy times. And yeah, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've had a wild week at TXG. It's been a wild year. 2021's been a lot of planning and making the merger with Club Champion official. And you know, there's a lot of positives to it. I know there's people with a lot of negatives, but you know, to clear the air, this merger has been something that is going to grow the dream of having more stores across not just the province, but across the country, and bringing TXG to people that can't get access to us day in, day out. If you don't live in Toronto, it's pretty hard to get access to us every day. So in order to create the tour experience in different provinces and, you know, feed the golfing population of Canada, that's what Club Champion is going to help us do. And we're going to learn a lot from them. Hopefully they learn some stuff from us. But you know, the beauty thing with it, Rye, is the brand doesn't change within Canada. You know, TXG will be above that door. Everyone will be trained the way we want them to be trained. You know, our demo matrix, again, this really is to help us grow, is to help us, you know, inventory more and get people golf clubs a lot faster. And, you know, all with doing it in, you know, the best club fitting and building we possibly can in Canada. So very exciting. It's nice to finally talk about it. It's been, I like a bit of gossip, and sometimes secrets don't last with me. But this one was a tough one to keep, but the team at Club Champion are nothing but class acts, and really excited to work with them over the, you know, coming years.
Well, you kept it secret from me, Mike, because you aren't aware. I knew last minute, like a lot of other people, not as last minute as everyone else, obviously, helping as part of the communications team, but it was definitely something that I learned a little later than others, but very excited for it to be. Cause I think, you know, one of the questions, and you mentioned it, and I get it all the time. I know you get it when you do your Q&As, Mike, where do you do the Q&As at on Instagram? Where's that?
Just Insta, Mike TXG.
There you go. Plug, nice plug, and easy. Plug. So, and so when I do mine, RDS Brath, you can find us there. People are always like, you know, where's the best fitter in this area? Where can I get fit over here? And I like you guys, but I can't get there. Right. And, you know, for travel reasons or geographical like reasons, it becomes very difficult. Right. And I think that is something that we've always strived to do, is to help more golfers get the right equipment. Because I think for us, especially in Canada, you know, people are familiar with the YouTube channel. They think of us as like an international group of people. And, you know, we've got Ian, Scottish accent, if you didn't notice. But we are very local in Toronto. Like, we are a couple stores, got a pretty big build shop, a nice like group of customers that come in from all over the world, really. But still, like, there is capacity there, and we're kind of pushing it. So I think that to me is like the biggest thing.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, people who are familiar with, you know, TXG, you know, our wait list has been insane thanks to COVID. But, you know, that wait list, although it was kind of, you know, a laughing point through 2020, 2021, going into 22, I don't really want there to be a wait list, and neither does Ian, and neither does the rest of the company. I, you know, I think that really devalues the experience of having to wait, you know, 4 months to come in and see us. So hopefully you can, you know, within the coming months, you have access to us a lot faster, longer hours in the day. We're trying to make it more accessible and get more people through the door, which is exciting.
And like the other thing too, if you are local and you do happen to listen to this, we do post last minute cancellations on our social media. So they do go in the Instagram stories. So pay attention. I know we've had people reach out within 5 minutes of those things going up. So if you are local and you're always curious, make sure those little alerts are on, because it is something that, you know, if you are trying to get in and you are maybe on the waitlist or not, it's a good way to try and snag one of those last minute spots. Definitely. But one of the things we're talking about today, Mike, and you know, I do want to relate this to golf, because I think it was something that I, you know, I found out, you know, there's a across basically North America, there's a giant snowstorm coming in Toronto, and the GTA was basically inundated with a blizzard. I was out driving today, kind of almost got to work, turned around, it was like six, seven, I don't know, we'll call it seven and a bit hours in my car. And the one thing is, like, I'm used to driving in the snow. I don't have a big SUV or anything like that, but I got a car with all-wheel drive. It's got winter tires. I'm used to driving in, you know, bad weather. I wouldn't say that I'm proficient, but I'm quite comfortable doing it, which is part of the reason why I tried to get there in the first place. But you watch people make really, really bad decisions. And I don't understand. Like, it's like watching a train wreck in slow motion, or watching, like, you know, the slow motion car crash and no one was crashing. It's like watching someone pull a golf club to go, like, hit a shot out of a lie over a hazard. And you're like, this isn't going to work out, man. Like, yeah, this is not going to work. Like,
there's that meme on Instagram somewhere or social media. And it's a picture of a yardage plate on a sprinkler. And it says, no chance, dummy. And although we don't want to lay up, there are sometimes you just need to punch it out or just lay up, because I don't think you're going to clear that water. And I get what you're saying. I'm not a professional snow driver. I'd like to be a professional sand driver or in the sun driver, in the next, 10 years. But this snow that we got hit with is like easily hip high, at least above the knee in the middle of the cars. And I got stuck this morning, and I have, apparently an all-wheel drive car that's used for snow, but didn't work today. So
I literally saw a snow plow stuck, like, crazy, getting onto an on-ramp on a highway. And I was like, wait, you're supposed to be clearing it and you just got stuck. And yeah, like, that's like the worst thing. I couldn't, like, yeah, okay, maybe this wasn't a good idea to be driving right now. But yeah, I watched someone trying to do a Yui, and it's like literally the moment they started trying to go through the snow kind of in the middle of the road, at like a low speed, I'm like, you're literally driving into quicksand. And yeah, I watch them get stuck, and I'm like, you know, I'm stuck already. So I'm like sitting in my lane here. I can't really get up and help you. So I'm sorry. You kind of messed yourself up there. It's like a caddy and a player. I'm like, you know, I don't want to do this, but you know, you made that decision anyways. Now, speaking of caddies and players, there was an event this week. We'll stop talking about the weather and all kinds of other stuff, but some people are calling it what could be short season already, but still, like, it could be the shot of the year, which was Hideki in the playoff, the three wood into the sun. Like, that was insane.
Yeah. Like, I think, the last time I saw a wick, like a really insane, I mean, it's not really insane, 'cause if you think about it, it's a pretty wide open shot. He's just hitting it onto the green. The impressive thing is, like, 270 yards on the fly, baby cut, puts it to what, 5 feet, 6 feet, that it is very impressive. Very Tiger-esque, you know, out of the bunker, I think at a WGC in Mexico a few years ago, 2019, that he hit, and he did that funny finish. I mean, those kind of shots are always going to, you know, stay in our minds. I mean, that shot yesterday, I was watching late last night, and I felt bad for Russell Henley, because he had a bit of a blow up on the first playoff hole, and he probably just wanted to get the heck out of there. But Hideki, man, that was some impressive golf. Let me tell you that the first, or how he teed off on 18 with that driver basically over the tee deck or over, yeah, the tee block. Both my dad and I were watching it going, he's either going to blow that Sony Open tee marker to smithereens, or he's going to absolutely roast this. And sure enough, he roasted it. And that three wood off the deck on the first playoff hole was insane. Really, really cool.
Like, we know as club fitters, and like one of the hardest shots to hit, really. And Hideki does it like unbelievable. He does work it both ways, like, pretty well. Obviously showing off in the playoff there, but to hit a draw with a modern driver like that, it's not easy, right? Yeah. It's not something that, because, you know, larger driver head, the center of gravity is further away from the shaft. So the axis of rotation, controlling that, like, workability, like that idea of a blade versus a cavity back, like, basically all drivers are cavity backs, so they're meant to go very high and straight. But to just rip this, that's what makes someone like Bubba Watson so unbelievably cool to watch, when you see like the shot tracers and all of those things. But to see Hideki just rip that draw like right over the trees, and he kind of, like, you know, you could see what he was trying to do with the follow through and everything, and that thing was smoked. I think the ball speed on that was 182, if they, like, based on television. And then in the playoff, although I think it was hybrid then three wood, which is nuts, it was like one, again, according to what they're giving us on the television, 177 off the fairway. Like, that's insane. Like, that is some freaking real ball speed there to, like, be able to hit a shot that high as well and land it soft. Because there's not a lot of people that are going to land a fairway wood that rolls out 20 feet.
No.
So And that, I mean, that's one of those things too. Like when we talk about fairways, and actually I had this question. So let's get to this. I know we're not going to talk all about like club building questions today, but one of the questions I got was, I can't see a fitter and I'm trying to like figure out my fairway. Now, you know, we've seen on the channel, certain players get fit for fairway. Someone asked me about my previous fitting for a fairway to like, you know, get some extra distance out of it. Right. And they're like, well, what's the ideal numbers for a fairway? And basically I explained to them, like, it comes down to what you're looking for, right? Like if I'm using a strong lofted three wood, I'm using it as mostly an off the tee club or something where I'm trying to roll it up. Like it's not something where I'm trying to like hit these like shots that are like towering and land soft. That's what I would use, like a higher lofted three wood or a five wood or something like that. They're really it, like the ideal three wood is really comes down to the player, doesn't it? Because you have someone at a slower swing speed, their longest fairway wood is not about their like a quote unquote three wood. Yeah. In many cases, it's a five wood.
Yeah. And that's why we're seeing a lot of higher lofted woods becoming popular. The 16 fives, you know, quote unquote, I guess that's a four wood. But you're, you know, they're calling them three woods. You know, people don't necessarily need a fairway wood that has driver numbers off it. And we see that a lot of time, you know, for some strong players, they're like, wow, I hit my three wood, you know, not even strong players, but I hit my three wood better than I hit my driver. Well, you're, you know, three down with your fairway, which is perfect, but you're three down with your driver, which is horrendous for most. So, you know, when you have a driver that's spinning or a fairway wood that's spinning at 2,900 or something like that, and, you know, it's basically giving you driver numbers, you're just kind of like, is this really playable? And that's where, you know, fitters like myself or all our fitters in general will, you know, we do a pre-fit questionnaire before you come in, but we will ask you like, where do you play 90% of your golf? Okay, I play, I'm a member at a club. If it's in the city, most of us know it and have played it or have seen it. So we can kind of understand how do we position you around that golf course? If someone says, listen, I use three wood more than I use driver, maybe, okay, we create something that's a little driver-esque. But if they're saying, listen, I need something that I can hit into greens, hold a green, I've got, you know, three par fives on my golf course, whatever it is, that's where we really need to understand. So even if you can't get to a fitting and you need to sell fit, I think a lot of people have to ask a question like, what do I need this club for? And a lot of times you're going to find out, okay, maybe I really don't need the 13.5 degree fairway wood. Maybe I need a 16.5. Maybe I need an 18 degree, you know, five wood and playing at three wood length. Like there's so many options in order to get you onto the green as efficiently as possible.
I've almost started phrasing it like, you know, it's not about what is your three wood. It's like, what is your longest fairway wood after your driver?
Yeah.
Because to me, that's more important and more crucial than just saying like three wood. Cause the idea of a three wood kind of ingrains like that club into your head or into a player's head. Whereas when you say longer or whatever, longest fairway wood before your driver, now you're talking about, you know, what is your longest iron, right? It becomes a gapping conversation rather than just like a single club conversation. And we've seen it with Callaway. They've got the 16 degree new Mizuno, which they just launched with the driver and the fairway woods. The fairway wood is a fixed, or sorry, it's a glued hosel again. They've gone back to that for weight distribution, similar to some other companies we've seen do that. Like again, Callaway has kind of stuck with that other than some tour products for like a couple of years now. And they've gotten right to a 16 degree because they know that like most people are using this golf club need that spin, especially with the modern golf ball. And we see that a lot. I know we always kind of talk about that, like the modern golf ball, but for most players that aren't generating, say, more than 110 miles per hour with their driver, even 100 miles an hour, maybe again, you can kind of figure it out depending on someone's dynamics. But the ability to create spin and create height is one of the most difficult things for players to do if you don't have the speed or you're not using enough loft.
Yeah, no, very good point.
Now, how do you find that with irons though? Because some of the question, again, I had this question again on Instagram was, you guys fit a blade and it went the same distance as the new Maverick, but the ball speed was way higher with the Maverick. And I said, well, they sent me the screens from both of the videos on YouTube. And I was like, well, look at the peak height on the new Rogue. Like the new Rogue Pro iron is literally like 25 to 35 feet higher than the same iron of a different model.
Yeah.
That stopping power, like, is stopping power one of those things we're trying to create all the time? I know we talked about Hideki's three wood stopping, which is not like a shot that a lot of players are going to hit, but the ability to stop an iron is something that most players still really need.
Yeah, I agree. I, you know, stopping power is number one. You know, we're always looking at, you know, spin and peak height and descent angle. And if we or a fitter can create, you know, consistency and we tighten up dispersion, you know, dispersion is only great if the ball's actually stopping. I mean, dispersion could be tight, but if it's, you know, your six irons pitching at, you know, 175 yards carry and rolling up to 190, it's not really efficient. You know, you're basically hitting it to the front of the green to play for a back pin. So you want those tighter dispersions. You need that stopping power. You need something that spins. And you're right, with the stronger lofted stuff, you know, being able to create irons that still can stop is huge for every type of player.
Cause a lot of people focus, like the old adage was a 7 iron spin at 7,000, an 8 iron spin at 8,000, 5 iron, five, like, you know, you just do the 1,000 times, whatever the iron number is. That is not the case anymore, right? When we're creating the right amount of height and descent angle, like that's really out the window when you're looking at it, isn't it?
100%.
So now this is new product season. And one of the things that we are excited about is there's going to be some interviews coming up with some engineers and some people that are behind a lot of really cool products coming out, and fitters and people that work on tour and work with the best players in the world. So that is on its way. But again, we can't talk about that right now because there's still some embargoes that are in place. I know one of them is, hopefully we're going to have Aaron Dillon from Titleist talk about SM9. We know they're out on tour. We know they exist. We're going to get into the nitty gritty with him, which is going to be exciting. And then also it hasn't spelled on tour. We're going to talk to Jose from Cobra about said product. I can't tell you exactly what it is, but I'm sure you can look it up if you're really curious. But one of the newest things is, and we were going to do this today and we're going to go through this, kind of test it out. We unfortunately couldn't because of the weather, and you know, we'll figure that stuff out later. But the new Fujikura Ventus TR. And Mike, do you want to talk? I'll let you run through it because I know you're the guy. You've hit it. I have not hit it. I was supposed to see it today, but unfortunately. So I'll let you give the details, because I think this is a cool product that a lot of people ask. You know, you see something like Hideki with a DI8 or something in his fairway, and it's been around for 10 years. Fujikura doesn't want to sit on their butt and kind of figure, like, you know, Ventus will just keep riding it. Like, they want to continue to innovate, and I think they've done that with this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've hit Ventus TR, you know, maybe 3 times. That's it. It was a quick test yesterday morning. I know Ian was testing it a little bit as well, and obviously getting ready for the channel today. It is Ventus TR day, I guess that's what you want to call it. It's an interesting profile. It's kind of, you know, launch wise, it's in between blue and black, I guess. To be honest with you, it feels quite soft in like the tip section, just from what I've hit it, very, very firm in the butt section. The beauty thing I like about it, and it's kind of their going chat, is obviously Ventus was very popular with, you know, VeloCore and stuff like that. This is very much the same. It's just they've been able to strengthen the shaft with some new materials. And the thing I like about that is we have seen it over the past with every manufacturer is, you know, they bring a stiffer kind of product to the market, and that's just going to really hike, you know, swing weight and stuff like that. Well, with this material that, you know, Fuji's using, they've been able to strengthen the shaft, but we're not going to really increase swing weight too much. It's not going to be a sledgehammer. It's not going to be boardy. So I think it's 10% firmer or something like that. It's one of those. I'm excited to get it in the studio. I'm excited to hit it more myself. It looks unbelievable. The blue is a different blue to what is the current Ventus blue. It's got a little bit of sparkle to it, and when you look at it outside, it's definitely special.
It is kind of like one of those things, especially with that profile, like the Ventus blue is extremely popular.
Yeah.
I know that I've used both the black and the blue. I generally kind of gravitate more towards the black just because of my transition. But for some players, like, that can kind of be a little too much, and then you're tipping another shaft and then you're kind of like changing things up. This does fit in that middle, almost like a middle profile. If we look at the EI curve, where it's designed to be more stable, but you're not losing out on ball flight. You're not losing out on stability or spin, but you get something that, you know, is another fitting option, right? Because that's really what it comes down to. I think when people talk about, you know, we have this or that, or like, there are so many options out there, in reality, like, we're only looking at say 4 or 5 options for a player, and then you kind of fine tune from there, right? Like if someone comes in and they hit, you know, 10 shots with their own driver, like once they're warmed up, obviously you've kind of got started to get a database set. Like how many shafts are you realistically grabbing off the wall? Like it's not 10.
No, it's definitely not 10. And I would say, you know, for, you know, putting like 2 categories for new customers, people that I've never worked with, or, you know, other fitters have not seen, you know, we're generally pulling maybe 4 or 5 different shafts, you know, all around similar profiles, maybe trying, maybe pull one that's got a bit of an unorthodox option just to see how, you know, it's not always, you know, A and B. Sometimes you need to go A to D right away to kind of make something work. For customers that I've worked with in the past, or I've had in the past, you know, you can slowly start to kind of, as new stuff comes out, you go, oh, this would be perfect for Ryan. This would be perfect for, you know, Jessica. And as those, as that works, you know, we're pulling 1 or 2 shafts, maybe 3, most throughout a fitting. And, you know, sometimes people go, I want to hit DI and I want to hit, you know, Ventus Blue and I want to hit this, and that's not their profiles. And although it's, you know, it's great, and don't get me wrong, like it's a candy store, everyone wants to try certain things. You really don't want to gas yourself within a fitting. I mean, it can get overwhelming, and I know everyone wants to hit everything, but remember you're there for a reason. And that's to, you know, gain performance with said club, whichever 14 clubs you need fitted for.
And I think that is one of those important elements of like when someone goes into a fitting, I feel like we talked about it in the past, but you know, as people are getting ready for the season, a lot of new clubs are coming out, and a lot of new equipment becomes available. People see this huge array of options that are out there, but in reality, there's only so many that are designed to fit your profile. And I think our audience is generally gearheads. That's why you're here, is to, you know, because I see stuff. I mean, I've been given the opportunity to try clubs that don't really fit me. And it's an interesting experiment to see how that manipulates launch numbers, how it might manipulate delivery, knowing that a club is too long or too short or too heavy or maybe too light, like whatever that happens to be, or, you know, there's too much loft or too little, especially like too little loft when it comes to like fairway woods, as we kind of already talked about, or even irons, right? Like one of the things I remember, one of my first shows I did, and I think it was on, you can find it kind of on the channel somewhere, but it was a conversation with Chris Deschel. And if you think about a 21 degree, a club with say 21 degrees of loft, right? That can be a 3-iron, that can be a hybrid, that can be a fairway wood. All 3 of those golf clubs, based on their club face and their center of gravity and their length, are all going to perform very differently. And, you know, one of them is going to reign supreme. And when it comes to like a golf shaft or even a grip or something like that, or just a model of iron, like I open that drawer immediately. I know that iron drawer is always fun to open up, and you see so many models. I know that I'm looking at like maybe 4.
Yeah.
Like 4 that I could go more towards game improvement. I could go more towards a blade or something like that. But I know in reality, there's probably 4 in there that I'm probably going to gravitate towards, which are going to end up being the thing, right? Because a great player might come in, and I know we tested them on the channel, which you did a great job, by the way, Mike, talking about those things, is like the new Rogue irons. And Ian's hitting a 4-iron like 230 yards.
Yeah, it's nuts.
He's not the target market.
No, 100%. You know, not to jump ahead, but I had a customer in on the weekend, and he's a Canadian long drive, professional long driver. Yeah. He came in cruising at 203 miles an hour in ball speed with a driver. But he was in for irons, and we did an iron fit a couple weeks ago, and he really wanted Mizuno. So I was like, okay, I've got Mizunos now, come on in. And we fit him into originally Srixon ZX7s, Dynamic Gold X7. He's a big son of a gun, this guy. Yeah, he's a firefighter, and he could shake the house. That's what happens when he gets to fire. He just lifts it and shakes it. But he, X7s, 39.5 inches, mid-size grips, just like a big set of irons. And, tested Mizuno's 223 was unbelievable for him. Really, really good. Now, good player, can really, like you said, could give him anything, and he's going to use it. He looks at the 221 and he's just kind of stares at me, and he goes, what do I do? And I was like, listen, let's hit it. We hit 221. Dispersion was really good. Everything was perfect with 2-2-1 as it was with 2-2-3. And ZX7 was really good. And he was kind of stumped. He was kind of speechless. He's like, what do I do? And I'm like, to be honest with you, I said, no fitter. And I know this guy really well. He's a good friend of mine. I said, I'm going to step out of the fitter's booth for a second and become a friend. 2-2-3 makes sense because of consistency. And on that little miss hit, you have some help. 2-2-1, because we're club junkies, I would get a set of blades. So you're right. There's so much stuff in that drawer that some people have no right hitting. You know, sometimes we just shouldn't even look at that. And then there's other times where it may be opposite. You get someone who's a great ball striker like this guy was, and maybe he's in tricks on ZX5s or Rogue Pros or whatever it is. So trust your fitter. Let them do their magic.
It can be kind of puzzling when someone is like a faster clubhead speed player and they miss a little bit, but like a modern blade compared to something that's say like 30 or 40 years old now.
Yeah.
They've got good turf interaction and they've got something where it's like they've got the clubhead speed. So even if they miss, but where they have a square club face, you know, we're not talking about face angle of the path. We're just talking about like a solid strike, although it might be slightly around the face. They still have so much speed that thing's going to go through, right? And so there is this like borderline where someone might gain control, although they might not be kind of right to that level of ball striker, but because of the speed, they're actually able to play something like that versus, you know, maybe they're not the best player, but you're not going to put them into something like a super game improvement because they catch one really solid and it's going to go 20 yards over the green, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever dealt with that, Mike, when someone is dealing, like someone is kind of that borderline player, like, you know, we call it the player's cavity, we call it a player's distance, whatever you want to say, they should maybe go into that category, but they actually need some reduction in the ball speed because of their miss. So they don't miss as big. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, that guy had it on the weekend. That's exactly him. I mean, his 2-2-3 miss was 20 yards right and long. And the, you know, 2-2-1 lofts exactly the same, just, you know, controlled miss with the 2-2-1. And that's something we talked about big time. I was like, listen, I was like, he hits his 6-iron 260 yards. He hits it a long way. And with 2-2-1 and 2-2-3, I think a degree difference in loft, after we adjusted it, we were around 230. He was pitching at 225, rolling like 230, 235. And I just said to him, I was like, listen, like, even though that's crazy long for me to think, I was like, that's a little bit more controlled for you to go out and play and kind of enjoy golf. I mean, he hits a 60 degree, 120 yards. So I was like, in order to kind of bring you back to some normal distances and not hit flyers and something that kind of, you know, runs away on you and your miss isn't as big, you know, taking a little bit of loft away and, or I guess adding loft, you know, is going to just give him a little bit more help.
That was something that I was always shocked when Phil was using those Epic irons, like the game improvement ones.
Yeah.
And like, again, obviously an unbelievably good player, but I'm like, do you really need like a super fast 6-iron or even like a 7-iron? Like, yeah. I think I can't remember exactly what the combo was. You have to check with our boy, Johnny Wonder, but to think that he would use that over a blade just because of like maybe like a distance thing to me was always kind of shocking. Cause like, again, I'm not a long player, but I would prefer to miss. If I'm going to miss, honestly, there's times when like I've tried game improvement clubs in the past, I would rather miss with a blade because I know it's going to, this is like the blade versus cavity back debate, which you could have every time we do the show, but I almost want to miss where I know it's gonna be short. You know, like I feel like at least I know where it's gonna go. Yeah. Most of the time, obviously based on my skill level, versus if you catch one with a game improvement iron and like, you know, you leave the face open, but you catch it with a square face, you're like, that's gonzo. And it's gonzo. You know, 15 yards over the green or 10 yards over the green. I don't normally miss too long like that, but you know, it is one of those things where it's gone. You're like, oh crap. Well, there we go. And you know, that's kind of, you know, so you mentioned this though. How does this guy gap his wedges?
That's session number two. we're most likely going to have five wedges because he carries driver, 2-iron, and then goes forward to pitching wedge. 2-iron, he carries it about 300. And then his driver, he's got a play driver that carries about 348, 355-ish kind of thing. So yeah, wedges are a big thing. I think for Jake, we have to kind of really speak, you know, grind and bounce with him, because he plays at one golf course and he plays maybe a couple times a week, and the wedges he has right now are just a complete wrong thing. I mean, they're not even meant for, I mean, his divots, he takes literally pieces of sod out. So, you know, stuff that we have to talk about, you know, entry points and all that, with his wedges. But yeah, he'll most likely carry five wedges.
Because players that are higher speed, there's more deflection. Like the ball will deflect the club head down into the ground more. I know that sounds like a weird thing to say, but if you've ever seen a shot hit with like a slow motion camera, the ball, like as much as the ball goes up, the club does like slightly deflect down into the ground. Mm-hmm. So the more force you have, the more it's going to go down to the ground. Like fast players need more bounce. Like a guy like John Daly, although he still takes like rip divots, like I know people kind of associate him with like these big pelts a lot of times. The reason is because of his delivery, but like a lot of it comes down to like speed at a certain point. Like you're just going to go into the ground. Like you almost can't help it because of the, you know, the conditions that we mostly play here. And we'll call the, you know, relatively speaking, the Northeast or, you know, Southern Ontario. Most of the time it's soft.
Yeah.
So you need this bounce. And people get scared of this bounce. They think they're going to blade everything. And that's not the case at all.
No.
Now, another one too, before we kind of get to the end of this, Mike, I know you had a big Q&A this week on Instagram. You answered a lot of different questions. And I want to kind of rapid fire a couple of them just so we can go through here, because I think it's kind of fun. It's always really interesting. And as we are getting into new club season, or people are maybe starting to get ready for the season, and there's still a lot of time, but we'll go through just a couple here. And the first one is, how often should you check forged irons when it comes to your lie loft?
Yeah. I mean, it all depends on your access to a loft and lie machine and who's bending your loft and lies, or at least checking them. You know, I've got a couple guys on my, you know, fitting roster that, you know, use some Mira blades and, you know, Titleist blades, and they play a lot of golf, a lot of high level junior golf and club golf. You know, for some of them, I suggest, you know, every 3 months for them to come in, because they are practicing and they're hitting off a lot of mats right now up in Canada. We're hitting off mats right now. So I'll always suggest every 3 months, you know, it's not like they're coming in to hit balls in front of me, that we're literally throwing them on the gauge. We're checking loft and lies, making sure they are where they are, and kind of sending them back on their way. You know, for stuff like, you know, an iron, like, you know, Strixon ZX7, or Apex Pro or something like that, T100, you could check them. I would say, just to be safe, I would check every 6 months. Again, it all depends on how much golf you're playing. But I just say every 6 months is a good little check. Make sure everything's dialed in. And if you really don't play a lot, I'd still say once a year, take them to your fitter, kind of give them a spring tune up and just make sure they're at spec.
And that's a good thing. One thing that I'll add there is, don't travel from shop to shop to like get them bent and checked and all these things, because it's all relative. I know you want to think that most machines are like completely bang on, but the one that you got fit for when it comes to lie angle for the degree can be off. Cause I've had people where like I'm always bent their golf clubs, and then, you know, maybe I wasn't able to do it. And then they'll call me like, did you bend them wrong? And I'm like, maybe, but the likelihood is you got them checked on a different machine that could not be calibrated correctly. Or, you know, ours are calibrated differently. I know a digital swing weight scale, you can reset every single time, but when we're dealing with a manual lie loft machine, and it's just the idea of making sure that you know your spec, because it is all relative, right? Like if your lie angle is 61 or 60 on one machine, and then it's, you know, 62 on another machine, but you're hitting great shots, which is how you should get your clubs calibrated, then it doesn't really matter what the actual number is. It matters what the result is. And then another one too, and this is one that actually comes up a lot. I know I noticed you answered it quite a few times, and that is, can you put a stability shaft in basically any putter?
Yeah, I mean, the diameter size they offer is 355, 370, and a 390. You legitimately can put a stability in any putter, maybe not an arm lock, because I think that's over 390, depending where you cut. So there's two ways you can install a stability. You can pull the head off and you can put on the you know, the blackout finish, you know, actual piece of steel that the stability slides on, or you can actually just cut the putter in half, which when we first started doing it, we were cutting a lot of putters in half. Stability wasn't sending us the pieces yet. It was very in its infancy stage. I still love cutting someone's putter in half. I think it's great. It's just it's a weird feeling. But that we cut it about 9 1/4 inches above kind of the hosel, I guess you want to call it, depending on, you know, S bend, plumber's neck, whatever it is. And then that stability, you prep everything and it slides right on. So I have not had a putter come in that I have not been able to put a stability shaft on. Yeah. I once put a stability shaft in a wedge. That was just for like some testing.
What? Explain this. Yeah. Was it like just for like chip shots and stuff?
Yeah, I have it somewhere in the basement. I'll send you a photo of it. I built one. I was sent, someone got a stability and we went to go blow the grip off because he wanted to save this grip and he wanted the stability off it because he was selling the putter. I don't know. I put the grip in the grip vise and when I went to go blow the air, the putter actually twisted in the vise. So it scratched the graphite of the stability shaft. So he's like, you know what? He's like, I don't even want the stability anymore. I really don't care. I was like, well, here, take this back. He's like, no, it scratches, throw it out. I'm like, all right, whatever. Put it in the garbage. It was a 36 and a half inch putter, threw it in the garbage. And then I was like, I wonder if I could throw this in a wedge. And I had a wedge head kicking around and I will find that wedge and I will maybe bring it next Monday for you to hit. Does it feel any different? I've never hit it outside. Does it look stupid? Absolutely. But I thought it was a fun idea.
I can think of like, cause I've done a couple of them now of the installations. And, you know, that is a question that I get is like, can you install? And it is this weird feeling to cut someone's putter in half, or you like measure the 9 or 8 inches, depending on the shaft diameter at that point where it goes in. And you're kind of like, what about the end of this thing? Like, do you want it back? Like, do you want this? Like, I literally, like, it's kind of useless unless there's a you know, there's not a grip on it, or you want to use it for an alignment stick or, you know, whatever.
Honestly, in the middle of, I don't know, maybe last summer or 2 summers ago, we were on a spree of building stabilities. At one point we were building like 25 stabilities. On one day we built 25 putters with stability shafts and they were all slaughtered. So there's like all these ends of grips. We like stuck them out in the grass and it just literally looked like a putter graveyard. And I think we used one as a shim. When we were building the Mississauga studio, we had to like lift, like kind of prop up the toilet. So we had like 2 super strokes on it. They've been used for everything. But yeah, I think, you know, you kind of get a chuckle of just cutting someone's putter in half. But, you know, people ask me like, do you like stability? I've used stability for a long time. I currently do not use it, but I like the concept and I like the idea. And I really do think it works.
I have three kind of putters that are in the rotation. I have a lot of different putters. The one that I have in my putter right now is the Fujikura, the middle one, not the firmest one, like the new one, the MCC or whatever. Yeah. I've got that, really like it. And then the other two have stabilities in them. Cause I just, I remember when they first launched, I had the opportunity to go down to their HQ down in Texas, went for some barbecue. That was lovely. And went through the putter fitting with them. And no, the one thing that I always tell people is it's not just something, it does come down to like a putter fitting as well as the ability to actually help control your miss. And I know I saw tighter data with it. I went in a complete skeptic. I'm like, guys, I've seen my numbers on Quintic. They're really good. Yeah. I mean, they're not like PGA Tour level good, but they're good. I know they're good. So I'm really curious to see like how this does improve my putting. And really didn't change my loft on the putter. Like it didn't come down to any of that, but it did come down to how that putter reacts when I missed a putt. And to me, that was like the most interesting thing about it was what that actually could do. And you know, that kind of, we'll finish on this. Cause I think this is always one of those kind of interesting things because it does come down to with the new drivers. We did a test on the channel last week. You can check it out. We did the Sim 2 and the new Stealth Plus, the one with the adjustable weight on them, because that way we could compare it most closely to the original Sim, because that is the one that, you know, I remember we talked about it when the Sim 2 came out. We wanted something, it'd be great if you could have the adjustable slider back, right? Yeah. And so they kind of brought it back in the Plus, essentially. Not that because we asked for it. we don't have that kind of pull around there, folks. So just to be very clear. But it does come down to what, when it comes to new equipment, like we don't tell you, you need to buy anything new, right? We're going to show you the data. We're going to show you how it can help you and how it can help improve your game when it comes to like the long-term goal, because at the end of the day, it's not about managing your best shots. It does come down to managing misses, right? We touched on it with irons. I just mentioned it with putters, but when it comes to your driver, it's all about making sure. So if you are getting fit, you know, don't just worry about that single long bomb. Like look at dispersion, right?
Yeah. Dispersion, and you know, you'll hear me say it a lot. I mean, again, all our fitters say it, the word, you know, the phrase good miss. And people kind of laugh and they're like, well, you know, they're like, haha, like, thanks. Like we're kind of taking the piss out of them, but we're not. I mean, yeah, it's lovely to hit the perfect shot every single time. And if you could walk in the bay and I could make that happen, there'd be a lineup around the corner. Or I tell people there'd be an extra chapter in the Bible with my name on it. But, you know, there is so many more miss hits that we all hit. And if we can manage those miss hits and make you aware of that. And I always use, you know, kind of comparison at the end of the fit. We're like, hey, look at how good your miss is now compared to your really good shots with your own irons or driver, fairway, whatever it is. And I think that really resonates with people going like, hey, like if I have a crap day, my crap day might actually be better than some of my good days that I currently have with this equipment, you know, performing better. So yeah. Good miss is a word that we like to use.
I'm really curious to see the whole crop of this year's drivers, because nobody out there is saying like, you know, this isn't the 15 years ago, which we reference a lot anyways, but like I can distinctly remember when like R7 draw came out and the marketing material said like 35 yards longer, but it wasn't just with the driver. It was with the driver, the fairway and the hybrid. And if you combine the average distance gain of those three golf clubs to someone's regular golf clubs, they picked up like 35 yards. It was a very interesting way, if you read the fine print, to tell someone they were going to pick up 35 yards, but no one's talking about that. No. Everyone is talking about ball speed consistency around the club face. And we see it with the Stealth, because of it does have literally a larger club face because of the lighter material, able to make that club face larger. I think it was like 10 to 15% bigger than like the previous model. And if you compare it to the Sim, it's actually a lot bigger. So like for me, I'm really curious to see the new Cobra stuff, interested to see the new Mizuno product in hand, because all of these things add up to like the Mizuno one, like literally in their commercials, it's like consistency, consistency, consistency. Because if, you know, tour players miss it, we want to make sure that we're in the fairway. And I know if I miss it, I know that I want to be in the fairway.
Yeah, I know. I don't know who was telling me this. I was having a conversation with Ian. I think it's when he was down in California chatting with Trotty, and he was talking to the tour guys who were testing Stealth. And a lot of those guys, if they're going to miss it, they want to miss it out of the heel, not off the toe. And all of them were saying, they're like, man, this is so much more stable. The miss it out of the heel is so much better. And for me, I'm someone who misses it out of the heel. Sign me up. Like I said multiple times, I think I already have three drivers on the go and we can't even play golf. But you know, the word of the year, I guess, would be stability. And you know, if we can, you know, we're tired of the, you know, more ball speed, more distance. But hey, if you're stable on your miss hits, you are actually hitting it further. Your miss hits are going further and obviously more controlled, which is a win-win for all of us.